Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Game of Thrones. I'm David Chen, and I've never read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
I'm Jonah Robinson. I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We are back. It is mid-February. And a lot of people might be asking, why are we recording a new episode? We're going to get to that in a bit. But first, I just want to mention you can find more of our episodes at GameOfThronesPodcast.com. You can also email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. That's acastofkings@gmail.com. And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/acastofkings. We should also mention during the course of this episode, we're probably going to spoil everything through the last season of Game of Thrones, which is Game of Thrones Season 4. But we will not spoil anything from season 5, and that includes any of the materials that have been released. Right, Jonah Robinson?
That's the plan.
All right, let's hope we stick to it. anyway, so why are we back? Why are we invading your audio feeds after nearly a year-long absence? Well, as I mentioned, a lot of developments have happened both in the world of Game of Thrones and in terms of the podcast. One of the big things we wanted to mention is that we are launching a Kickstarter today. So as you listen to this, there will be a Kickstarter for the show. A lot of people have been asking us, are you going to do a Kickstarter? Are you going to do something, you know, the next season of Game of Thrones? So there will be a Cast of Kings this season to cover Game of Thrones Season 5. That is the big news. It is definitely happening. And the reason it's definitely happening is because we have received full corporate sponsorship for the entirety of a Cast of Kings covering Season 5 of Game of Thrones. So, that is only due to the awesomeness of our listeners. And we have such an amazing, engaged audience who turn out every week not only to just watch the show and to listen to the podcast, but also to write in with some really thoughtful commentary on both the podcast and the show. And it's only because of how amazing you guys are that we have been able to reach this point where we now have full corporate sponsorship for the entire season of Cast of Kings. Jonah Robinson, I think you would agree with me when I say that we have one of the best podcast audiences out there, yes?
We do, absolutely, 100%. And I echo what you say, that we would not be here were it not for you guys. And not only that, but you definitely enhance my understanding of the show with your emails. And it's that interactive aspect that we enjoy so much, making this more of like a discussion rather than the two of us like preaching at you our opinions, which is why we're even doing a Kickstarter, right, Dave?
Yes. Well, firstly, you guys also enhance my understanding of the show, and you enhance my understanding of my lack of understanding of the show, if that makes any sense. But yes, so a lot of people have asked, you know, when are you going to do a Kickstarter? So we're launching a Kickstarter, but I want to start off by saying this Kickstarter is completely optional because we're definitely doing a new season of the show regardless. So you should not feel the need to donate to the show because, like I said, we've received full corporate sponsorship. That being said, a lot of people may want to support the show anyway. And if so, you have the option to do that and you will get recognized on the podcast for doing that. So we really appreciate it. But again, completely optional because we have full corporate sponsorship. And it is the amount that we've set the Kickstarter at is dramatically lower than previous amounts. So
we talked a lot about this, and I think we were a little worried about seeming greedy, and that's not at all what this is about. Honestly, I just got really sad at the idea that we wouldn't be able to read like mispronounce people's names on there. So
Joanna really wants people to pay for the privilege of her mispronouncing their names.
I mean, I think it's money well spent. So
I agree.
So that's why that's there, really. We would read everyone's name on air, but there's just like a limit. So we devised this little system to put a cap on how many names we would read, but still, yeah, provide the opportunity for you guys to have that. I especially love it when you guys nominate someone else. I think that's pretty cute, too.
So. Yes. So again, completely optional. Feel free to completely disregard it, and Cast of Kings episodes will still show up in your feed. But for those diehard fans out there, and we know they're out there, you are welcome to contribute if you would like. So, and we appreciate any contribution that you have. But primarily, we appreciate your listenership because you guys are awesome. And I never thought that what started out as a wacky side project between the two of us would grow to be literally the most downloaded thing that I have ever done in my entire life. So yeah, really grateful to be doing the show again, and we will return regardless of what happens with Kickstarter. So anyway, what has been going on in the world of Game of Thrones since we last spoke, John Robinson? A lot of stuff. One big thing that happened was that Game of Thrones played in IMAX recently, right?
Yeah.
And this was the last two episodes of season four that aired in IMAX. And a lot of people were asking, like, are we going to go see the IMAX debut of Game of Thrones? And neither of us did. Now, the Game of Thrones IMAX still did very well. Without our patronizing it, it made a couple $1 million.
Right.
And that's very good for a show that already exists and that people can basically access very easily. Neither of us felt particularly compelled to go, despite the fact that we are both big Game of Thrones fans. We both devote many, many hours per year to watching, analyzing, discussing Game of Thrones. But neither of us felt compelled to go. Why, Jonna Robinson?
I know my answer, which is that if they had picked two different episodes, I probably would have gone. I really understand why they picked episode 9. It was the most cinematic. We talked a lot about how it was almost like its own self-contained film. But we also, everyone who listens knows that I was not really a fan of episode 9, much to your guys' dismay. So when I found out it was episode 9 and 10, I liked like half of 10, but those were not my favorite episodes of the season. If they had done episode 8, I would have gone, no question. So I think that's why it was, you know, part of what Dave touched on, which is that we've already seen these episodes. And then, yeah, they're just not shows that I, episodes that I loved. So
episode 8, being the Mountain and the Viper, right?
Right.
And that is the episode in which the Viper battles it against the Mountain and
right.
in a legendary duel to the death.
Yeah,
I got to say, like, episode 9 was very impressive visually. Part of me felt like I just didn't know if those special effects would hold up on a big screen. But part of me was also thinking that I also don't know if those were some of my favorite episodes.
Right.
And I also don't know if I'm going to pay $15 to watch it again, I don't know if those would be the episodes that I would choose. In fact,
right.
I'm telling you right now, those were not the episodes I would have chosen. Right. I think there is definitely some season 3 episodes that I would have really loved. You know, the episode where Daenerys, you know, takes control of the Unsullied, I think would have been pretty good to see.
Yeah. Or even season 2, even Blackwater, I would have watched that battle episode.
Yeah, Blackwater. I mean, that would have been pretty spectacular on the big screen as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't know if it would have been spectacular on the big screen because that was such a beautiful episode, but it was also very dark.
Right.
You know, so I do think that Watchers on the Wall, that's what it's called, episode 9 last season. That was just better shot overall to be blown up, probably. But I did hear back from some people who went to see it that it did look like an episode blown up. It didn't look like it was made for the IMAX screen, which is understandable, but it's still, once again, it wasn't something that I was, and I'm not like, you know, I'm not passing any judgment on people who did go to see it. I'm really happy that they had that experience. And there is something really fun about, you know, mingling with a bunch of other Game of Thrones fans in the theater. That was probably really fun, that community aspect. But since I'm a misanthrope who doesn't like other humans, you know, that aspect's lost on me.
Yeah, since human contact makes me like my throat swell up and I just kind of get the hives and everything. I mean, and also it's can be a hit or miss experience, you know. Sometimes you can get an amazing crowd and sometimes you can get a horrifying crowd. So you just never know. So really, why leave the house at all, I think is what we're saying.
If
you did go see Game of Thrones in IMAX, and also like the format is also different, right? IMAX screens, like true IMAX, they are more square, whereas Game of Thrones is shot in widescreen. There is cropping going on. So I guess when I see something in IMAX, I prefer it be something that was filmed in that format. I almost never go to IMAX unless it's something that I know is going to take advantage of the full size format screen. So.
I think the last thing I saw on IMAX was like The second Batman, the second Nolan Batman.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, The Dark Knight.
That is quite a while. You didn't see Interstellar in IMAX?
No. I saw it on, there's a huge theater in Marin that's sort of like associated with George Lucas. I saw it, it's not IMAX, so that's where I saw Interstellar. But no, and The Dark Knight was thrilling in IMAX. But in general, it's not an experience that I chase, clearly, since that was the last time I went. So.
Exactly. We're really – this episode is all about apologizing for not going to see it in IMAX.
And sounding like old shut-ins. So, yes. You know.
That's right. People are getting to learn a lot more about us. All right. So if you had a great experience, let us know at acastofkings@gmail.com. We'd love to hear about it. What else has been going on? All right. So Jonah Robinson, firstly, there's a trailer for season 5 that came out. And I got to confess that I watched the trailer.
Did you?
And I quite enjoyed it. You know, I think all the trailers have been awesome. Like, they just, every year, they turn out some of the best, you know, TV show trailers I've seen, you know, in my life, basically. Part of that is because it's HBO and they're just really good with the trailers. And part of it is because Game of Thrones has spectacular imagery that is very enticing. So watch the trailer, had a good time, and almost always there will be a song that, like, the music supervision of the trailers is incredible, and there'll be a song that I just know I have to listen to 100 times after I watch the trailer.
Yeah, so this is TV on the radio doing David Bowie's Heroes.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
So good.
Really good stuff, and I didn't find it to be particularly spoiler. I mean, there is some stuff that is kind of spoilery. There is a major... Well, you know, I'm not even going to say it because there might be people listening who don't want to indulge in the trailer. So I will say that there is some potentially spoilery stuff. But speaking of potentially spoilery stuff, Jonah Robinson, there was also a 30-minute documentary released about Game of Thrones, the making of season 5 of Game of Thrones, right?
Right.
So you have seen this.
I did watch it.
So let's start by, you know, telling us overall thoughts on the documentary and then assessing whether or not it's safe for non-book readers to watch.
So it was called A Day in the Life, and it sort of purported to track one single day, sunrise, sunset, of the production for Game of Thrones in, like, Croatia, Spain, and Ireland, I believe. And
So to give some context, Game of Thrones – there's 10 episodes per season. And I believe, I don't know how to best describe this, but essentially all the episodes are filmed like simultaneously, right? Like it's not like, oh, they film one episode and then they film another episode, right? Like you might have a plot line that is filmed in Croatia and you just need to film it in Croatia, like through the entirety of the plot line for the whole season, right? At one time, like, or within one stretch of time. You can't just treat each episode like its own movie because otherwise, logistically, it would be impossible.
Right.
Did I describe that okay? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that Game of Thrones does. They juggle multiple locations, and it's ever-expanding. And you're right that it's not shot chronologically. It's shot according to a million different factors in terms of when they can get access to certain things, I'm sure the weather, you know, all sorts of things. So they do have, you know, just like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings will have, like, multiple what do they even call that? Like... You know, like how Andy Serkis was like the second director on The Hobbit.
Like a second unit director.
Second unit, yeah.
Multiple production units.
Yeah, and that's fairly common, but like some productions, especially ones so staggering in scope, lean into it a little bit more than others. And so in this, I suspect that this documentary was sort of ginned up a little bit to make, you know, to pluck just sort of the more exciting things to make it look like this day was, you know, they made it very conveniently look like one day, but I don't really mind because that makes for a more interesting documentary. That's fine. But what is clear is that, you know, Dan Weiss and David Benioff are like hopping from country to country to supervise this whole production, which is crazy, you know? You know, because your director of an episode might be in like maybe split over a couple countries, but for Weiss and Benioff, it seems to be much more hectic. So even further hats off to them. And what I will say is that the people who watched this episode or this documentary hoping for sort of spoilery insights were kind of disappointed. So I actually think there are some indicators of what's to come, but it's nothing that people didn't already know was coming, I guess, if they read the books. If you haven't read the books, it's a lot more about the technical aspect than it is, you know, you'll know that Cersei goes to this place and she wears that dress while she does it, but it's not like an important thing that happens there. There is like in Ireland, I would say there is something that is revealed but I really think once again that it just means something to people who know what it means, and they did a good job of not showing things that would reveal, you know, you don't see a dead body on the ground of a beloved character or something like that. So, you know, watch at your own peril. Dave, I would not recommend you watch it, but I think if people are on the fence, you know, it's not that harmful. I also know that some people just found it kind of boring because they're not interested in the technical aspects of Game of Thrones. The part that I loved the most is they showed the water gardens of Dorne. This is where Oberyn's character is from. And they're shooting it in this palace in Spain. And I forget what it's called. I can look it up really quickly. But basically, like, this is a big tourist attraction and thousands of tourists come there, you know, every day, or hundreds or something like that. And they closed it down for Game of Thrones. And it's the place where the royal family takes residence when they're in this like spot of Spain. So it's just beautiful. And if you've seen promo images for the season, you've seen this set, and it looks kind of Moroccan, kind of Spanish, and it's so beautiful. So, I think it's worth it, but you know, unless you're a major spoiler phobe like Dave, and then maybe not. So.
Well, that is Game of Thrones Season 5, A Day in the Life. It's available on YouTube right now. It has over 1 million views, so it's very popular. And yeah, it's about half an hour long. And I'm probably safe to watch it after the season is over, yes?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So did they show kind of – when we talk about how a director directs an episode, like Michelle MacLaren or Alex Graves, right, or whoever directed an episode, is the director flying around to the different locations?
That's the implication that I got. Sorry, really quickly, the location is the Alcazar of Seville, or Sevilla, is the location for the Water Gardens of Dorne. But yeah, that's the implication that I got, that a director, it's not as hectic as it is for the people overseeing the entire production, because I think they're in one location for longer than the people who are just hopping around constantly checking in. You also have these producers, like the unit producers, who are just in charge of the Spanish unit. So you have a high up person who's like consistently overseeing this entire location, this entire unit, is my understanding. I'm not an expert on film or television production, so please do write in and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but...
Fascinating.
Yeah, and it was fun for me actually to watch that, because my sister is actually a producer and assistant director at the San Francisco Opera, and so this is what she does. This is the main people you meet in this documentary are the producers, who are in charge of the day to day logistics of everything, and that's exactly what my sister does. And it's always fascinated me. It's a kind of mind that I don't understand, that has to just grasp so much detail. And yeah, when you watch this, you just really get an idea of the scope of all the extras, you know, and then you see a director walking around being like, I'm going to need all these extras to have fewer teeth. So if you could go back through and black out more of their teeth, that'd be great. I need them dirtier, you know, like stuff like that. It's interesting. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, it is something that is incredibly logistically complex, and I am super impressed that they're able to pull it off for the amount of time that they pull it off, with using the amount of money that they use to pull it off. So very nicely done. And again, it's called Game of Thrones Season 5, A Day in the Life. Now, there's also been some casting news announced. We probably shouldn't talk about that, right, Jonah Robinson? But suffice to say, we've learned about new cast members coming to Game of Thrones. You can look that up if you want, if you're a book reader.
You mean like the Comic-Con announcement?
Yes.
Like just the cast in general. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's from quite a while ago. But yeah, I guess if you're a book reader, you might enjoy that.
I think it's safe to say that the great actor Jonathan Pryce has a role. Doesn't matter what his role is. If you know Jonathan Pryce, you're excited, right?
Correct. Correct. I mean, I loved him in what do you call it?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I was gonna say The World Is Not Enough. No, wait. Yeah, is it that the James Bond movie?
Oh, I didn't know he was in a James Bond movie, actually.
No, I'm sorry. Oh gosh, why can't I remember it? I'm singing this theme song until it gets to the title in my head. Tomorrow Never Dies. That's the one I'm thinking of.
But Jonathan Pryce, also, of course, of Brazil fame.
Brazil fame. Yeah, I mean, that's probably his least remarkable role.
I think he has several Tonys.
So you're excited about Jonathan Pryce.
I am. And Alexander Siddig. I don't know if you were a Star Trek Deep Space Nine person, but Alexander Siddig, who played Dr. Julian Bashir, dreamy Dr. Julian Bashir on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, has a role too. So
yes.
That's great.
He is very dreamy. And he apparently hasn't aged since Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I think he's just gotten more distinguished looking.
He's gotten a little bit salt and pepper thing in his beard now, but everything else looks exactly the same.
And Keisha Castle Hughes.
Yes. Right. Whale Rider.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's all we'll say.
Yes.
I think people already know that, right?
I mean, those people, just saying that you're looking for it doesn't – maybe they could die in one episode. We don't know.
You don't know.
Just because you're looking for it doesn't mean they're going to have a major plot or anything.
Yeah.
All right. So what else happened? You know, General Robinson, there was this thing that happened recently where George R.R. Martin explained that season 5 of the show would kill off characters that were still alive in the book.
Yeah.
And you were upset by this, right? Why is that?
I'm not upset that he said that at all. Not even a little bit. George R. R. Martin can say whatever he wants. And my theory is that he's trying to distance himself a bit from the TV show, because we've known this for a while, that the TV show this season more than any other is going off book. And I'm actually also already on record as saying I think that's a good thing, because I think books 4 and 5 needed some major editing, had a lot of problems. So I think, you know, them going in a slightly different direction will have its pluses and minuses, just like any TV show. But what it's not that George R. R. Martin said that, it's the hysterical way that people are reacting to it. Because let me list for you some people who have died in the show that are still alive in the book. Pyat Pree, all of Danny's handmaidens that got killed in Karth. Zara, all the Karth people that died, basically, are still alive in the book.
Jojen Reed, that's a big
one. Jojen Reed, Jojen Reed is it's debatable. And then one of the kids, one of the Lannister kids. So if you have the misfortune of following me, I don't know if you remember, but there were two Lannister princes who the Starks had captive, and they killed both of them, and one of them's named Martin Lannister, and that character is still alive in the book. I'm not saying they're major characters, but I don't think George R. R. Martin's talking about major characters either. I mean, you know, with all due respect to Jojen, and
how dare you?
So
all the Jojen apologists are going to come out of the woodwork now.
If you follow me, if you have the misfortune of following me on Twitter, you saw me ranting about this earlier this week. What bothers me more is the hysterical reaction, and it's not even the fans, it's the way that it was reported. I feel like people writing about Game of Thrones just glommed onto this and reported it in a very hysterical fashion. And that really bothered me, because it's not a new thing. It's not a new thing for the show to kill characters who are still alive in the books. So for George, it's fine that George R. R. Martin said that. He didn't say anything dishonest. But to report it as if it's as if they're going to start killing off major A-list characters who are important to the end game just because they feel like it, that's not what that story is, you know? And so I don't know. I also think I'm probably just extra cranky this week for whatever reason, and I decided to get irritated about this. So
no worries, no worries. So
that's my take. Does that make sense? Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense that I would get so irritated by it, but does it make sense that this isn't really news?
Yeah, just because, as you mentioned, it's happened a bunch of times in the past. So That being said, Joanna Robinson, what would really get you to eat your words now would be if a major character was killed.
Yeah.
Off, right?
Sure. I'll apologize.
So now, this is a good gauntlet throwing going on right now.
Yeah.
Of you saying, hey, guys, this is business as usual. Minor characters are going to die. We're not going to see anyone major die that didn't die in the books, blah, blah, blah.
They might bump up from, like, you know, Danny's handmaidens to I can't even throw out random names because you guys are going to read too much into it. I'm trying to pick someone like so random that it has no meaning, but you'll find meaning in it anyway.
Right.
Anyway, you know, if they kill off some B-tier characters they built up maybe from the book that are actually like D-level characters in the book, but they built them up to build a narrative around them, and then they decide to kill them for drama. There is one character, we'll talk about it if it happens, and I've written about it on Vanity Fair under spoiler warnings, but there is one character I'm worried about this season, but you can go read about that on vanityfair.com if you want to. I won't talk about it here.
Who is Daenerys's main handmaiden, the one who's in love with the Unsullied guy, kind of?
Miss Endy.
Miss Endy.
Yeah.
That's someone who's ripe for killing, I think.
Right. Season. She was one of the ones I almost mentioned, but especially because she's a child in the book.
Right.
You know, they've changed, like, that's what I mean about, like, a lower level character that they fleshed out. You know, they fleshed out her character and Grey Worm's character to bring more drama to the marine plot, which is kind of boring. And so if they kill her, they kill Grey Worm after they've, like, developed this love story between them, I wouldn't be surprised. But you got to stop killing off Danny's handmaidens who are alive in the book. Like, at some point you can't just be like, oh well, Danny's handmaidens are disposable, so we'll just keep killing them.
That is like a cursed job.
Yeah, like, that's the red shirt. Yeah,
you'd only get that job if, like, the economy is really bad, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise you stay clear of that one because it just leads to a bad fate. So all right. Well, Jenna Robinson, that's all we have really for this bonus episode. There is one last thing we want to cover, though, before we wrap up. We're probably going to do a full kind of recap, bring people up to speed on what's going on from season 4 before we get into season 5. At some point, we might do a bonus episode, or we'll fold that into our first recap episode. But before we get to any of that, though, I mean, is there any plot line that you're particularly looking forward to seeing how it plays out, regardless of how long it may take to play out?
We talked about this beforehand, if it was safe for me to talk about this. And
right, because when I say regardless of how long it would take for it to play out, that means that Joanna Robinson can list a plot line that might resolve in the first episode. That's so short that she knows it's going to resolve quickly.
This is a promise we made that is something I could say.
Yes.
I will just say that the Dorne, I think it's safe to say, since I already talked about it in terms of the documentary, they're going to Dorne, which is Oberyn Martell's home territory. They're going there this season. We know because we've seen set photos. They're shooting there, blah, blah, blah. And I am really excited for that. I believe they have changed things drastically and contrary to my reputation, apparently. I think that they've changed it for the better, and I think it's going to be really interesting and cool. And then, you know, who knows, that might be where they kill, like, an A-list character, and I get to eat my words about it. So,
All right. Well, let me list three things real quickly.
All right.
Okay. The first thing I'm going to say is, Joanna Robinson, if I'm not mistaken, you heavily implied last season that there was going to be some major event that never occurred.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Yeah.
In fact, it was so major that we listed one of our hover.com – we named one of our hover.com promo codes after it.
We did. I was sure.
And it never happened. Let me also point out hover.com, one of our generous sponsors for this season.
All right.
And so I never figured out what that was. And I'm very curious. So
I'm so impressed by that because when it didn't happen – so many outlets wrote about it and they spoiled it because they assumed it was never going to happen. I still believe it's going to happen. And I've written about this over on vanityfair.com. But, like, there are some indications that it might still happen. So everyone who was like, oh, it didn't happen, now I can tell my non-spoiled friends what it was, you suck, because it might still happen. So
what were you impressed by? The fact that I've avoided it?
Yeah, I'm just impressed by the way that you read the internet in like such a safe way. I don't know how you do it. I get spoiled every single day for TV shows that have aired on the East Coast that are about to air on the West Coast. You know, like every day someone on Twitter spoils me on something. So I'm just impressed by the way you live your life.
I appreciate that. yeah, I mean, I go jogging every day. I drink protein shakes. I live a very regimented existence. I will say that I did go on a massive rant this week on one of my other podcasts, the Slash Filmcast, about the fact that I tweeted the winner of Top Chef 3 days after it occurred and got a ton of crap about.
3 days after is outside the buffer, I think. It's hard to know, though. People's buffer, people's line is ever changing.
Well, what I was trying to draw people's attention to is the fact that, like, 3 days, I think, is not a sufficient buffer for a show like Game of Thrones. But I do think it's a sufficient buffer for reality television. That was the kind of line that I drew, because I feel like reality television has real-world consequences. But I also acknowledge that that line is completely arbitrary. So maybe I'm wrong about that.
Right.
Anyway, suffice to say, I'm very careful about that. So I try to be careful about, like, I'm very careful about reading spoilers. I'm very careful about giving away spoilers as well. So I try to be very disciplined about that. Anyway, so whether that mystery thing will happen or not remains to be seen.
yeah. And don't tweet at Dave about it.
Why are you saying, why are you tempting them, Jenna Robinson? and so that's number one. Number two is very interesting to see what's going to happen with Tyrion. He has done some terrible things. Mm-hmm. He has killed some people who are very important. Mm-hmm. And he is probably going to have a difficult time this season, is my guess. So that's,
I mean, when you start out in a box, you have to go up from there, right?
I guess.
Who knows?
I guess. And, also interesting to see what happens to Arya. I mean, I just feel like the Arya storyline, it is one that I really want to see where it goes, but it's also one that I feel like is taking a really long time to get there. And maybe that's just because, I mean, all the plot lines are taking a really long time to get there. But I guess I feel it most acutely with Arya because I guess I'm rooting for that character so much. And maybe because I identify with her the most as a person, you know, in terms of her descent into being a complete sociopath. So, you know. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how that plays out as well. I mean, we're also like, what's going to happen with Daenerys? Is she going to actually take over King's Landing? You know, and so on and so forth. Like, a lot of plot lines have taken a long time to play themselves out, but Arya, I feel like her time is due. Particularly because she wasn't the one that was able to extract vengeance on Joffrey last season, or was she? I don't think so. But yeah, we'll see how that plays out. So I think it would have been logistically impossible for her to be involved.
Oh my God, I forgot how fun this is in terms of like you throwing out the craziest thing. It's great.
Well, I'm glad we were able to give people a preview of how amusing it will be to watch Dave Chen figuratively flail around at what is and try to figure out what's going on with the show.
Yeah, you guys should know that I told Dave that I didn't think it would be fair to ask him to predict what happens. And he's like, I was like, you know, people are going to get all like, oh, Dave doesn't know anything. But Dave is so game for it. He's like, no, that's fine.
I believe my understanding from reading people's emails is part of the pleasure of the show is watching someone completely incompetently make terrible prognostications about what's going to happen. So prove me wrong, internet. Prove me wrong. Mm. All right.
But what is going to be interesting about this season is I might be the terrible prognosticator. I'm actually not really allowed to prognosticate, but you know, given as the show keeps going further and further off book, you know, I'm going to be on less and less firm ground in terms of predicting what's going to happen. So
yeah, we'll so see. It'll be, you know, the dynamics of a show will be mirrored in this podcast as well, you know?
That is true.
In terms of how uncertain things are, given that the Hand of the King has just been murdered. So, you like how I tie it back to the plot?
I really did. So slick.
Yep.
So good.
That's how it goes. That's what our corporate sponsors are paying for, guys. So, Anyway, all right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for today. In the meantime, Jonah Robinson, where can people read your writing about stuff like Game of Thrones?
Yeah, so you can find me over on VanityFair.com. I write about Game of Thrones a lot. Just today, I wrote up the two deleted scenes from season four that were posted online today.
Actually, do you want to talk about that before we go?
I mean, they're pretty non, you know, as is usually the case with a deleted scene, you're like, yep, I see why you deleted that. One was Dany and Missandei shortly after Jorah was exiled. That one really felt like a non-scene to me. The other one was Shay and Bronn right after Tyrion kicked Shay out last season. And I think that probably could have the show could have used that just because I think the audience had such a hard time feeling sympathetic to Shay this whole season. And I think the courtroom betrayal is just better drama if it's more if you're not just like, oh, Shay, I knew you were an asshole this whole time. You know, if you're like, oh, I feel for her, like she's upset and she has limited options and this feels like the best option to her, but it's so sad. And so to see her as broken as she is in that scene, broken up about being kicked out, I think would have served her character well. So,
all right. Well, you can
that's over on VanityFair.com. And I will want to say, I do want to say that if you guys are going to want to listen to me on another podcast, I do too many, but the one that I really do want to promote is the Thought Bubble, which is this comic book podcast I'm doing. So if you happen to watch Game of Thrones and like comic books, I know it's very unlikely, but if you do, and you want to hear me talking about comic book television and comic book movies, that is the Thought Bubble, which you can find on iTunes, or you can find all the episodes at fightinginthewarroom.com/comics.
Find my work, my music at youtube.com/DaveChenMusic and find the other podcasts I do, one of the other podcasts at /filmcast.com. All right. I think that's going to wrap us up for today, Jonah Robinson. But once again, we wanted to say thank you to all the people who listen to the show. And you have the option of donating, but we don't expect it at all at our Kickstarter. But really, just look forward to a fun season of A Cast of Kings. That's really all we want you to do is tune in, listen, and tell your friends about the show. So, yeah, thank you guys very much. We'll see you guys soon. We'll probably do one more bonus episode before the show begins, maybe.
Yeah.
Or more likely, the first episode of this podcast will hit the feed during the week after the season premiere. So look forward to that, guys, and we'll see you guys in just a few short months.